Session number 26984.
Frank House, reel 7.
Yeah.
So this was your action with the Canadian.
Yeah, we're now in Merksem, which is 4 miles south of Antwerp, which is where we arrived, and the Canadians also. The Canadians cleared, the Germans had evacuated all the civilians from Merksem, and the Canadians pushed on, chasing on, and we came on behind, and we used to, as I say, clear up behind them. And the first evening or night time, we were sent off into Merksem, and the sergeant major said that it would be useful if we could bring in a prisoner. They particularly wanted a prisoner for some reason. So anyway, with that in mind, I set off with my pal Albert Dix, who we used to christen Farmer Dix because he worked on the land pre-war. However, we positioned ourselves and we hadn't been there many moments before we heard pitter-patter feet coming from the right.
And where was your position?
In Merksem.
Right. What were you, behind a wall or in a building? Or?
On a corner.
Right.
Yeah, we're coming down this road here, and the road ran literally here. So we heard this pitter-patter coming down here, stealthy. Farmer said, right, he happened to be there. So I nipped across here to cover Farmer and the intruder as well. This huge look came around the corner. Farmer already had his bayonet fixed. He was very fond of his bayonet. Too fond, I think. So at any rate, he sort of hands up to this fellow, and he reluctantly stuck his hand up, and he jabbered away in some language you couldn't understand. And he kept, whilst he was talking, he kept dropping his hands, and I was dead scared. I said, don't dispatch him, you know, because you know what the sergeant major said, we've got to take him in. So at any rate, I came over and helped Farmer with him, and Farmer nipped round the back, and I was on the side there, or slightly in front, taking him in, this huge man, still talking, and still having to be told to keep his hands up. Sergeant Major took him over, and they said, right, well done, off you go again, back. And then we went on and stayed out there most of the evening, night time. Next morning, we had to report to the major. We got a dressing down. Don't you know the difference between a German soldier and a Belgian civilian? And we heard the story. Then this fellow was creeping back to see if his house was all right. And the instruction was from the officer then that we had to go down to his house in Merksem, to his wife and family, one daughter, and to the gentleman himself, because Merksem was then cleared and they were coming back, the civilians. And to apologise, which we did, and luckily they laid on a very nice meal for us. And she was a lady, she was English, the wife, from Newcastle, and he was the foreman of the motorworks in Antwerp, and I don't know what their names were. Anyway, I used to send her letters in my green envelope, shouldn't say this really, which was quite the wrong thing to do, and I used to receive 50 fags occasionally back, you know. And but she was, you know, it was lovely seeing her, and her daughter was engaged to a university student. I met him as well. And in fact, the Belgian people are still trying to trace who I've been over to Belgium recently. They're still trying to trace over there who it was.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. So how did you get on with the Canadians? Because the Canadian army is similar to the British, but not exactly the same.
I thought the Canadians were brilliant. In fact, I've only last year met them. I was over in Ypres, and I met a sergeant major there who served at Bergen-op-Zoom the same time as I was there. I got a photograph of it somewhere. They were over there at Ypres to re-exhume, and what had happened is four Canadians being dug up in Bergen-op-Zoom. They were re-exhuming them again.
So back to 1944.
Yeah.
Did you see any other action there, actually, with the Canadians, or were you?
I tell you where we did come in valuable there is Falkirk had just started, you see. And we were lent, or the Canadians mainly, were trying desperately to seal off the road that comes out as the causeway. It's still there, actually. It's only one way you can come off a Falkirk. It's this causeway road that leads into Holland. And that's what Canadians were doing, and we were falling up behind. Anyway, Falkirk, when they found that things were going the wrong way, the Germans were coming, trying to get out of there, that's when we came in useful. Then we managed to get hold of some 3.7 Hackett guns, and we fired airburst at them one particular night, evening or day. I forget when it was now, what time of day it was, but it was a very profitable shoot, because the colonel went over the next day and he came back very pleased with the result.
So who was the senior officer with your group?
Lieutenant Colonel Leach Porter.
Leach Porter.
Yeah.
And he was the Marine senior officer, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately he got drowned, he drowned in Loch Lomond boating with his son.
Did he?
About 15, 20 years ago.
Right. So, the Canadian Army, you were going through the Low Countries, really.
Yeah,
did
that's right.
Did you then
right.
swing round towards Germany, or?
We got detached from the Canadians. We went to Oosterbrig, I think it was. Oh, yeah. That's somewhere towards Germany, Oosterbrück. Mm-hmm. What was happening is that, you see, Antwerp was the most heavily bombed city in Europe, and there was flying bombs and rockets, in particular flying bombs. This is what we were after, because being Hackett gunners, we were transferred there to try and stop these flying bombs, because they were coming in at 25 at a time. And any Hackett gunner, whether the Army, Royal Marines, they were all transferred to this place, and they put up this box barrage, mm-hmm. and they were bringing down these flying bombs.
It was quite effective, was it?
Very effective.
Right. What sort of gun were you on?
Pardon?
What sort of ACAC were you
3.7.
on?
3.7.
That's right. Yeah. So how many guns did they have set up? I mean, this was all round Antwerp, was it? Or?
No, this was quite some distance from, not far from Germany. This Buck Barrage was being put up as close to the launch pads as possible. Which prevented quite a lot of, but Antwerp was really knocked about. In fact, I've been back there during this last few months to a spot where 2,000 people were killed in 1 minute. A rocket came. There was two cinemas. There was a street down here. These two cinemas were back to back, and this rocket came down and struck and flattened both cinemas. And there was roughly about 2,000, and quite a lot of Marines were in there as well. And I almost went in there. My pal Huntington, he definitely wanted to go. We got up to the where you pay. And I said, no, I'm off to Brussels. So I won the day, and but for that, I would have been in there. But I've revisited that site last September, actually. Quite something.
What were the attractions in Brussels? Was that a more exciting city?
Well, I'd already... No, I hadn't been to Brussels then. What had happened was I had a letter from a pal of mine that was stationed in Brussels in some brigade headquarters. And whilst I was up in Holland, I caught the ammunition train and went down to Antwerp, walked through Antwerp, caught a Yankee lorry and visited him in Brussels. But I think that was after, I might have been before, I don't
know. Right, okay. So you did the Box Barrage.
Yeah, the Box Barrage.
After that?
Yes. Well, after that, it wasn't very long before we were taken out of the line for rest. And... whilst we were resting, the war ended.
Right. What were your feelings when you heard the war was over? How did you hear about it?
Well, I was home on leave.
Right.
And I was so disappointed that I was home on leave, because this place was like a morgue when I came home on leave. And I missed all the excitement out there in Belgium, Holland. So that's what happened there.
So, but you went back after your leave, did you?
Yes, went back to Holland and went back to Belgium. And it was only a matter of days that we were sent home on leave.
Really?
Not sent home on leave. What happened then? Well, we came home on block, presumably. Oh, yes, we came home on block, and it says here, we then were stationed on the Exeter bypass in Nissenhaus.
Really? Near Exeter, was it? Yeah.
They made sure we didn't go to the Royal Marine training camp.
Why was that?
I don't know. I expect we knew a bit, we were a bit too educated, you know, for the new recruits.
So the war was over. What were your feelings? Was it relief or...?
Yes, I was... I had a chat... Well, when we came home, I was sent up to near Aldenshaw, near Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
In motor Royal Marine Transport camp, driving instructor.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And let me see now. I could have been promoted there. I could have been promoted there to a corporal, but I already forgot to tell you that before we went to let's see, I could have been promoted to corporal and sent up to Scotland to another camp training up there. But where was I? There were 8 of us passed out as officers before D-Day, this was. So I'm retracting a bit.
Yeah.
We went to a school at Largs, an American school it was, American, they used American technique. And they wanted to officers for D-Day on landing craft. And we didn't realise that that was the case. We thought they were wanting officers to go back out Japanese theatre again, so 8 of us. There were 8 of us passed out, 7 refused, and one took it. And I'm still in touch with Wilf Gibbs up at in the London area. We talk about this because he and I always talk about being turning down this commission.
Yeah. So no one fancied going out to the Far East.
No, that's right.
No,
no, that's right.
So you went. You were instructing people driving, were you, in Oldenshaw?
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
Did you do that for long? Were you waiting for your demob?
Yes. I was waiting. After I came back, I served another 6 months in England before going to the extra bypass, and from there down to Plymouth to draw my suit and trophy hat.
Plymouth, where you
yeah, that's right.
So what plans had you got? You know, you've been in the army for a good long, the Marines for a good long time.
Well, the colonel said to me, have you sorted out a job or anything like that? And he asked me the same thing. Yeah. What plans have you got? I said, no plans at all. They said, well, surely you must have some idea. And I said, yeah, I only got one idea. Shall I say it? Get out of this lot first. And he was disgusted. I can see his face now.
So you weren't tempted to stay on?
No.
Make a career of it. Why not? Because you've done quite well.
Yes, I'd been too lucky during the war. I could tell of instances. If I, you know, I suppose this happens in life. If you'd have turned left instead of turning right, you never know, do you, what's around the corner.
Yeah.
That's life, really.
So that's what you felt. You'd had your luck, and
I was so lucky.
So what did you do? You came back to this area, did you?
Yes, came back to this area. Yes, I came back to this area. Now, what did I do? I know I couldn't get a job to start with. And then suddenly there was a job going. Wanted a driver to drive school bills. Okay? Mm. And so I took it. And I didn't realise how lucky I was there. And I did that for, funny thing, up the top of this estate is another fellow. He and I were on the same thing.
Yeah.
And he's a pretty wealthy chap too, Graham Hoare up there. However, I drove the school mills for 3 years? Or was it as long as that? Well, I drove to school mills.
For a while.
And then after that, I wanted to go into business. And I drove my wife crazy, really, because I got married in 1946. And I felt I'd like to go into business.
Cause, I just moved that second.
Yeah. So, I had the opportunity of going along to see a gentleman with a shop who said, well, you try the business for 3 months, see if you like it, and we'll try you to see if you're a suitable chap to sell it to, you know. So anyway, we tried it, and I realised it wasn't for me. And then the wife saw an advert in the paper that the local authority wanted a rodent operator. I term it as a rat catcher, and I'm always proud to tell people he was once a rat catcher, you know.
Oh, you did that. So you weren't, do you think you were settling down, or were you finding it difficult to settle down? Because you'd been moving about in lots of excitement. And
yes, I was settling down because I'd already bought some land. No, that was a bit of luck.
Do you think you were finding it difficult to sort of think what job you wanted to do, though? Because, you know, what I'm thinking was that, you know, you had such a lot of excitement during the war, mm-hmm. moving about, you know.
No, I didn't, really.
No, you felt quite content to be here.
I settled quite reasonably well.
Did you get nightmares at all, or flashbacks?
I don't know whether I'm right or wrong. I sometimes say that all we old veterans, as the older you get, the more you think about these things, especially if you belong to associations.
Yeah. But you didn't have any nightmares when you first came
No,
back.
I didn't. No, I can't say I did.
Yeah.
I was too busy, in fact.
Right.
I built my own home, and I did a lot of building.
Yes.
I first of all, I built a wooden hut to live in. First of all, I bought a ex-army tent to live in. Having bought this land, I thought, right, I got a base. Right.
And did your wife live in the ex-army tent as well?
No. I put it up for a fortnight, and we were in temporary accommodation at the time. And she very wisely said, no, thank you.
Right, okay. So we must just, now we've finished the war, we'll just press on. What do you think, I know it's a difficult question, what do you think you actually learnt from being in the Army, or in the Marines, I'm sorry for saying Army, during the war?
It's all the same in the services, isn't it? I learnt discipline, which is a good thing, I think. And whether my reactions have been much quicker than the normal run-of-the-mill people that have been in the services.
You mean like decision-taking?
Yeah, decision-taking. Mm. Now, whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know. It can be, it cannot be. Whether it cannot be more than can be, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I tend to make quick decisions. Perhaps a good thing when you're driving, having looked at your car. But certainly, I think you live a well-ordered life and tidy. I don't know. There are pros and cons, isn't there, really?
Yeah, right. Okay. Anything else you want to add? It's been a fascinating story.
Something I was sort of passed through my mind, but that's by the by.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. When I joined up, there were two Frank houses at Yeovil when we were at Loughlin Barracks. The colour sergeant used to say Marine House, and then he used to get here colour sergeant, and then another echo used to be here colour sergeant, and he used to get this echo, you see. And he looked at me. I used to be at the front, And I used to think, are we going to break one here, you know? And he thought I was a, you know, peculiar chap. Until he found out he had two frank houses. So one was transferred to Arborfield, where half of the 5th Brigade trained. And when we got out to Egypt, we were issued with these tags. One of these tags is the other belongs to the other bloke, and the one belongs to me.
So they managed to get you muddled up anyway.
So the other bloke was taken prisoner. I had escaped under a false
name.
Yeah, that's right. So there was some confusion, and sent off out in this desert for fortnight recuperation. So there was some confusion. So our parents were notified missing, presumed, killed, until they finally got round to them. So, as I say, those tags, there's different numbers on each.
Wonderful. For all the army's paperwork, all the military's paperwork, they can still get it.
That's right.
That's lovely. I'll just say, Frank House, thank you very much indeed.